Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast. There must be some misunderstanding edition as we look ahead to Sunday's game against the Patriots at Paul Brown Stadium, a matchup surrounded with controversy due to New England's admitted violation of an NFL rule involving a videographer with Patriots ties. Dave Lapham and I will weigh in on the latest Bengals topics, including the team's red zone woes, the late season surge of Joe Mixon, and two of the game's all-time greats who are coming to town on Sunday, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. My locker room conversation this week is with defensive end Carl Lawson, who says, quote, that sacking Tom Brady is an all-time dream of mine. He'll get a chance on Sunday. And in this week's Know the Foe segment, we'll get the lowdown on the Patriots from the radio play-by-play announcer, Bob Soucy, who, like me, used to call baseball games for the minor league Pawtucket Red Sox. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Graders. I had the unique privilege of going on a behind-the-scenes tour of Graders Ice Cream Factory this week. In celebration of the University of Cincinnati's 200th anniversary, Graders will release a limited edition flavor in January called Boldly Bearcat. It includes red velvet Oreos, chocolate chips, and a sweet cream base. I got to see and taste the magic that goes into making Graders ice cream, and the attention to detail is amazing. Every pint is truly handcrafted. When it comes to ice cream, there is nothing greater than Graders. Now let's get to football. The Bengals host the defending Super Bowl champion Patriots this Sunday, and the big storylines this week could have been the likelihood that Tom Brady is coming to Cincinnati for the final time, or the mutual respect between Bill Belichick and the Brown family. But instead, both cities have been focused on a controversy that erupted last Sunday in Cleveland, when a videographer with Patriots ties was caught shooting footage of the Bengals coaching staff on the sideline. That is against NFL rules. My broadcast partner Dave Lapham caught wind of it and asked Zach Taylor to comment at a Monday news conference. The Bengals head coach acknowledged that he was aware of an NFL investigation into the incident, but had no additional comment. The Patriots eventually admitted breaking the rule, but said it was an innocent mistake. Who you believe might come down to which team you root for. At this point, there's not much more to say, at least until the NFL issues a ruling. So Lap and I stuck to football. Let's talk about the Bengals' red zone woes last week. Hindsight is always 20/20, but when you look back at a first and goal from the two, where you didn't score a touchdown, and you didn't get the ball to number 28, do you think the coaches are saying, man, we should have taken our chances with Joe Mixon?
You know, like you said, hindsight 20/20. Pete Carroll is probably thinking the same thing to this day. With beast mode, Marshawn Lynch, do you give beast mode the football and don't throw the interception and beat the Patriots? I think you got it. And he admitted freely that, yep, if I had another opportunity, I'd give it to Marshawn Lynch. I think Zach would do the same thing, another opportunity. The only thing I can say is third down, they hammered him in there and didn't get it. Fourth down, barely got it. So he's thinking, man, it's tough sledding running the football. They're really ganging up on us here pretty good. Maybe we take the thing we've worked on in the red zone, our best pass all week long, and we utilize it here from the 2-yard line. It might be the best down to throw it on, you know, thinking contrarian. And it didn't work out. Cordy Glenn picked that play to get beaten on, and he got beaten for a quarterback sack. And a quarterback sack, you know, from the 2-yard line dictates that you throw it, the two remaining downs. So it totally took them out of what they were hoping to do. But I just wonder if the difficulty they had, I mean, they picked up that fourth down by millimeters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they're thinking, geez, I'm not sure about it, hammering it up in there against the wall. But Joe Mixon was probably very frustrated. And I can tell you as a former lineman, very frustrated that the coaching staff didn't believe in us enough that we could get that done from the two-yard line. But you didn't show them enough in the sequence earlier, so I guess you got nobody to blame but yourself. But, yeah, long story short,
run Mixon.
Well, speaking of Joe, he ran for 146 yards last week. He can now get to 1,000 yards this season by averaging 70 yards over the final three games of the year. How much different is the Bengals' running scheme now from what they were doing in the first, say, half of the season?
Light years difference. And, you know, they've talked about the trip to London when they were traveling out there and coming back. They talked about changes that they wanted to make, and Jim Turner was the lead force in that area. And they started doing things differently to block Aaron Donald. And they started fanning out on the backside and pulling tight end around to lead up on linebackers like we've seen. They started doing those type of things. And so now you're man blocking and pulling, and you're I call it pin and pull. You're pinning a couple of linemen and pulling other people around instead of just area blocking. You know, you're two guys, you in the center, the guard in the center are responsible for the defensive tackle and the linebacker, however they unfold. And then the guard and the tackle on the front side are responsible for a defensive tackle and a linebacker as well. So it's duo football, two double teams working off defensive linemen to get to the second level. And that was becoming, you know, pounding against the Great Wall of China. Everybody had it figured out. Now you're angle blocking, you're pinning people, tight ends, wide receivers are doing a good job on the edge, pinning people, linemen are pinning people when they block back. And then pulling people. And Trey Hopkins is a very, very, very strong puller at the center position. He played guard. He knows how to pull and how to block people. And they got good production out of a short toss where they'd pin and pull. You know, and they'd pull Miller and they'd pull Hopkins. Left side, they'd pull Jordan and they'd pull Hopkins. And Joe Mixon reads it out very, very well. And they're doing a good job. And a lot of times they're setting the edge, you know, with a pin and getting all the way to the outside with Joe Mixon. And Dan, the other thing that it does, instead of a defensive lineman knowing they're just going to come off and double team me, now I'm getting hit from this side, I'm getting hit from that side, they're pulling in front of me. I mean, it gives you much more to think about, and you can't be as forceful because you only have one thing to worry about. Now you have to not be as aggressive, and it helps you in pass protection. It helps you in a lot of ways if you attack guys from all different angles and they're getting hit from everywhere instead of just knowing exactly what's coming.
John Ross was back last week. He was in for roughly half of the offensive snaps. His stats were modest, 2 catches, 28 yards. But did his presence affect the defense and play a big role in the Bengals going for a season-high 451 yards?
I think so. I think that the very first play he was on the field, I wanted to see if there was a safety over the top, and there was. You know, he had a corner underneath, safety over the top. So I think, honestly, Joe Mixon had a career-high rushing of 146 yards. The box wasn't as crowded. Why? John Ross was back. So it not only helps other receivers, but it gives running lanes inside for Joe Mixon. The box gets emptied out a little bit more. You know, that's why they were talking about, down there at the four-yard line, they had played two safeties high, and they had the box unloaded. There were very few people in the box, and that's why they went with the quarterback draw. You know, it's like, man, all we talked about for the first, half of the season is they were playing in a closet, and everybody was at the line of scrimmage, 7, 8, even 9 guys in the box. So I do think the John Ross factor was real, and he played maybe half the snaps. I think he played like 35 snaps, something like that.
I think it was 53% of the offense.
53% of the offense. And I think they had 72 snaps, so he probably had, 36 or 7. Yes, 37 snaps. 2 catches for, 28 yards. So, and one of them was a 20-yarder. So he didn't have it wasn't a big, looking at stats, wow, John Ross had a major impact. But on a snap-by-snap basis, I think his presence benefited others.
The youngest Bengal, Michael Jordan, has taken every snap at left guard the last two games. He started 4 out of the first 5. Then he mostly watched for 6. Now he's starting again. Evaluate his rookie season.
I think that he learned a big lesson because in Pittsburgh. The offensive line didn't have a very good game with 8 quarterback sacks. And Cameron Hayward, who he was blocking, had 2.5 of them. And, you know, I think he learned a lesson. Cameron Hayward said, welcome to the NFL, rookie, and took it to him. But with that said, he was dinged up a little bit. He had a little bit of an injury to his leg. So he's recovered from that, and he's recovered mentally from what took place. And I credit him, because you have two choices: roll over and play dead, or fight back. And he fought back, and he's played well. The last couple of games now, he is long, strong. He can move. When he pulls, he can move. He's got a big body with big feet, and he picks them up and puts them down out there. I mean, and the thing that is impressive with guys that size going against smaller people, it's like, you know, an 18-wheeler trying to change direction with a Maserati when you're out there blocking smaller people. And that 18-wheeler changes direction pretty well. He's got some ability, you know, athletic ability in space. So I think he's got a bright future. I think, you know, when he first started out, I think it was he didn't know what he didn't know. Now at least he knows what he didn't know, and now he's trying to figure out how to understand what he didn't know. And I think that's, you know, his graph is going up. He's making big progress.
Another rookie, Jermaine Pratt, was the Bengals' leading tackler. He had 8 tackles, 6 solos. Is his graph going up? Should we be optimistic about Jermaine Pratt?
I think he is improving. The one thing that I've noticed, though, is for a guy that played safety and now has gotten bigger and gone to linebacker, a lot of times when he's in coverage or even trying to make plays in the running game out in space, he doesn't change direction really well. You know, he's a little stiff. You know, like it'll take him 2 or 3 steps. He'll run by running backs that are cutting back or receivers. It's like, well, I thought a guy that, you know, had played the safety position may have a little bit quicker change of direction, a little bit more athletic ability than he's shown. And I don't know if it's just, you know, he's being overly cautious, or I don't know, or if physically that's not part of his repertoire. So we'll have to watch that a little bit more. But I do think he's getting better. I think repetition breeds comfort level. I think he is seeing things a little bit better, and I think he's making more plays. But I thought he'd be a little bit tighter coverage in space and be able to close on people a little bit more athletically than he's shown to this point. Maybe that's all going to come, though.
This will be the 8th and possibly last time the Bengals ever face Tom Brady at age 42. He's 6-1 against the Bengals. He's completed 67% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, passer rating of 107.8. The last time he came to Cincinnati, the Bengals won 13-6 in the rain. But in the other 6 games against the Bengals, the Patriots have scored 34 or more points in every single one. When you watch Tom Brady, what stands out?
Everything about him, his poise, his demeanor, his physical and mental presence of, I'm in complete control. There's nothing I haven't seen. There's nothing you can do that is going to rattle me. I've seen every defensive concept known to man multiple times, and I'm ready. I'm prepared. You're right. The last time they were here, there was just a monsoon when they had the football, and that broke. I think it was 50-some-odd straight games where he had a touchdown pass, and that broke that streak the last time he was here in Cincinnati. So maybe they can hold him without a touchdown pass again. But watching him on tape a little bit this year, he at 42, I don't care who you are, his skills have diminished. He's still a good football player, but he's not what he was physically. And he's got Edelman and then a bunch of other guys. He doesn't have a whole lot of weapons. So physically, he's not capable of lifting everybody. And now they don't have enough weapons to lift him. So he's kind of caught in almost the perfect storm. And they're struggling a little bit offensively. They're going to a lot of gadget plays, a lot of gimmick plays that are – Josh McDaniels is doing a great job of calling them and calling them at the perfect time. And that's the key, is when you call them. And he's doing a great job of calling them, and the Patriots are executing them. But Tom Brady is it'd be hard to pick who's more competitive, Bill Belichick or Tom Brady. And they're both like uber competitive and will do anything it takes to win a football game. And I've always said many times over the years here in Cincinnati, the reason we had a good decade in the 80s that led to a couple of Super Bowls is some of our best players were some of our best people, you know, highlighted by Anthony Munoz. And then you got Kenny Anderson and Boomer Esiason, a quarterback, and you got, you know, the list can go on and on. Chris Collinsworth, Isaac Curtis, and, you know, all these guys. Tom Brady, being the guy he is, the kind of guy he is, when your best player is working his tail off to become even a better player, it lifts the whole boat. And Tom Brady works harder than anybody. First guy there, last guy to leave, still, after 20 years of it. You know, and there's a lot of reason to go home. Giselle, that's a good reason to go home with the beautiful children they have. But, you know, it's like you say to yourself, look what Tom's doing. Am I doing enough? Man, I better pick it up. And that's what he's brought to the organization for many, many, many years.
The New England Patriots come to town with a little added motivation this week. They've lost two straight. People are accusing them of being cheaters again. Do the Bengals stand a chance, Lap? And if so, how?
Boy, what they have to do is they've been playing hard, but they haven't been playing smart enough. Haven't been making enough plays and playing smart enough. And against the Patriots, you have to play smart because they take every mistake you make and rub your face in it and capitalize on it. And somehow their mistakes don't lead to tragedy, and your mistakes lead to huge misfortune. I mean, that's just the way they win. And, man, they jump on you. The slightest blip, they're jumping on it. They're plus 19 in the turnover department. You got to take care of the football. If you can somehow force a turnover, if you can finish plus in the turnover department like they did against the Cleveland Browns in the last game, the first time all year that they've done that, they have a puncher's chance. If they don't win the turnover margin and they give the Patriots extra possessions and minimize their own, it could be in big trouble because the Patriots are allowing less than 13 points a game. The Bengals are scoring at just over 15 points a game. So will the Bengals offense be able to do enough in terms of scoring to make it a competitive game against this Patriot defense as number one in the NFL in points allowed and a myriad of other things?
Let's ignore the videotaping controversy for a second and discuss Bill Belichick's coaching ability. He's taken the Patriots to 9 Super Bowls. He's won 6. This is the 17th consecutive year the Patriots have won 10 or more games. It's unbelievable. What makes him one of the greatest coaches in any sport of all time?
Number one, they've been dominant. Number two, they've been in a crappy division that they can dominate. So, you know, every year the Dolphins have struggled. The Bills have had their issues. You know, the Jets have had their issues. I mean, it's been the best team in the NFL in the worst division. So they're going to win close to 10 games almost by default. So, you know, part of that, that's part of the reason. But with that said, he's a genius. He's a football Mensa, and he has an answer for every situation. In fact, he has multiple answers for every situation that arises during the course of a football game, and he will rotate in those answers freely and very wisely during the course of the game. Plus, and with that said, he surrounds himself with players that are versatile to be able to do all of those things and all those variances in situational football and have the intelligence to comprehend it. So he has a big inventory of things to draw from, and he has smart enough players to be able to draw from a big inventory. And the players believe in what he's doing, and he believes in his players, and that trust is a big, big deal.
And I didn't even mention his greatest achievement of all. He once went 11-5 as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Belichick's all-time record against the Bengals is 15-4, and believe it or not, there's little difference between his time in Cleveland and his time in New England. He was 9-2 against the Bengals as the Browns head coach, and he's 8-2 since arriving in New England. Now time for this week's locker room conversation as I visit with a third-year defensive lineman who had the Bengals' only sack of Baker Mayfield last week and would love to get one this week against three-time NFL MVP, four-time Super Bowl MVP, and six-time Super Bowl-winning quarterback Tom Brady. We're in the locker room with Carl Lawson. Over the last 4 weeks, opposing offenses are averaging less than 15 points a game against the Bengals. Do you feel like the defense has turned a corner and has become a strength of the team?
Yeah, I think we're definitely improving, and we just need to keep on building and keep on working. You know, we're not where we want to be. Our record shows that. But the one thing you can't do is just regress. So we just got to, you know, keep on working.
Anything stand out to you in particular during this stretch?
I think just health, and then just people, you know, knowing the situation that are their jobs on the line. Especially, you know, in this league, it's when you got a record that we have, you know, a lot of people are auditioning for not just this team, but other teams around the league. So, I mean, this can end quick, so people got to be on their toes.
We're talking to Carl Lawson. With Sam Hubbard out, you were in there for more than 90% of the snaps last week and started the game. How was that for you?
It was good. It was really he does so many different things for our defense that allows other people to be who they are. So, I had to fill in for him, and it was just, you know, asked him on different tips and stuff at his position and things that he did. So it felt good.
He does a lot of things, and you did a lot of things last week. You dropped back into coverage quite a bit. How's your comfort level on doing that?
My comfort level is and anything that we do, a defense is good. I could be a great player anytime I'm out there on the field. Difference in, you know, what I got to go out there and do. It's just everybody has a role on their defense. As you know, what my role is mainly for a team is to just go in, you know, pass rush situations. But I'm also an excellent run defender, so when my number is called, I'm able to do that.
We're talking to Carl Lawson. You tore your ACL in October of last year. Do you even think about that anymore, or is it completely out of mind?
It was kind of like, you know, in the first beginning of the season, and I had a hamstring, so it just adds a bunch of stuff on. After the bye week, I really start to feel like myself again. So, you know, I don't think about it coming into the bye week, because it's like I had the hamstring on top of coming off the ACL, so it's hard to move and a little slow out there and process stuff. But now I'm starting to get comfortable.
Carl, you're known for your pass rushing ability. I happened to be walking behind you in the hallway a couple of days ago when you were on your way to lunch, and you were working on your pass rush moves. You were doing, like, you know, swim moves and stuff like that. Do you find yourself kind of unconsciously, constantly working on your technique?
Yeah, not just pass rush. Anything that I have to do in football, I want to constantly work to get better, because, I mean, my goal is to be the best no matter the situation that I am. And now, eventually, over my career, I strive to be the best. And so I'm going to just keep working to do that. And so anytime I can walk around a corner or set an edge or, you know, work on my coverage responsibility in my head, I'm going to do that. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
A few more questions for Carl Lawson. You face the Patriots this week. Would sacking Brady be different from sacking anybody else?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely an all-time dream of mine. I mean, you know, he's the GOAT for a reason. And definitely, maybe if I get a sack on him, you know, it might rub off on me and help my game. So, I mean, that'd be an all-time dream to you know, get a sack on Brady. But, I mean, it's honestly just an honor to be on the field with him and play against him, because he's, you know, he's a consummate pro. The way he takes care of himself, the way he's consistent, you know, it's a true blessing.
You put a lot of time and energy into maintaining your body. Do you have an added level of respect for a guy that seems to be obsessed with his?
Oh, I have a ton of respect for Tom Brady. I mean, he's done it for 20 years, and that's something I kind of want to do. I don't really plan on, like, not playing a long time. I kind of see these first 4 years, the early stages of my career, and after that, I want to play, like Cam Wakelong, like till like maybe 38, you know, and that way I can, you know, be in an all-time sack conversation.
Last thing, you guys don't have a chance to go to the postseason this year. Do you relish the opportunity to be a spoiler, to try to hurt the Patriots or another team's playoff chances?
No, for me, even though I'm not in the playoff, for me, it's taking these games and getting the experience to go into next year a better player. That's the main thing I get from it, is just going out there and going out there and getting these games in so I can get the experience so I can come in next year a better player and get closer to my goals. So that's what I don't really care about spoiling it. It's, you know, thing I just care about playing so I can get better.
Appreciate your time. Best of luck this week.
Appreciate it.
That's Carl Lawson. The Patriots are on the verge of wrapping up a playoff spot for the 11th straight year. That would give Bill Belichick a new NFL record for consecutive playoff berths by a head coach. He currently shares the record with Tony Dungy. But after an 8-0 start, the Patriots have sputtered a bit. They've dropped three of their last five games, albeit to the other three first-place teams in the AFC, Baltimore, Houston, and Kansas City. For more on the Patriots, the radio voice Bob Soucy joined us for this week's Know the Foe segment.
Let's talk about the big story this week in both cities, and
Spygate
2.0. I hate to even use the term, but how is that playing in New England?
It's playing about as you would imagine, having spent a fair amount of time in these parts yourself, of course. And I do miss those days when we were together, able to get lunch once in a while in Boston.
But, me too.
Obviously, it's dominated the conversation here. A lot of different narratives. I will say that locally, it's been a very strong and reaction, somewhat mixed. But the Patriots are in a situation where the past precedes them, and I think locally people are taking a somewhat wait and see approach, by and large. But nonetheless, obviously, it's a story that has gotten a lot of coverage and gotten a lot of play on the radio and as well in print and on the World Wide Web.
Bob, I guess the thing that almost amazes everybody is, when Mangini was coach of the Jets, the Patriots got their thumb in a vice about filming sidelines, filming signals. And even though this isn't a football operations as such, although they were doing a documentary as on a football operations guy, an advanced scout, he is a football operations guy. Is it just a case of the left hand not knowing what the right hand's doing? Was Bill Belichick left out of the loop as to what this videographer might be doing from a responsibility standpoint when they were putting together this feature story they were doing?
Yeah, and Dave, let me first backtrack a bit and explain a couple of things about where I am and what I do. I am employed full-time by the radio station. I do a lot of work, though, for Kraft Sports Productions and have for the last six seasons. This is my seventh year overall for the Pats and in my second year of the team. Started to do work on a part-time basis for KSP. Mm-hmm. Kraft Sports Production is a pretty innovative wing of the Kraft Group and the Patriots organization. For example, a couple of years ago out at Super Bowl 52, they put together a 24-hour network all week long in the Twin Cities, the Not Done Network. Last year, they took a different approach and nonetheless provided a lot of content as well that week. It's the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that they have done with a lot of support from the organization. And they have been running this Do Your Job series. This is, I believe, the second season of it. They have featured college scouts in the past, equipment people. Nancy Myers, who's the longtime personnel assistant for the Patriots. She's been here for 40-plus years. Did a piece on the trainers last week. So they really make quite a commitment on this side of the organization, speaking of KSP, to try to give fans who really have an insatiable appetite like elsewhere for that kind of content, any peek behind the curtain, if you will. So that being said, and I have to admit that, I know a lot of the principals very well who right now are very much concerned about this situation, dealing with it. Belichick spoke. I certainly can't speak for Bill, but Bill just spoke a few minutes ago. And in this press conference, again, I think more adamantly even than in the last 48 hours, made it clear strongly pounded home the message that nobody from football operations had anything to do with this. I'm going to quote one of my most respected counterparts from around the league and just say that, when I heard of it and as I followed it, I can only say that I can't believe anybody would they really be this dumb to do that? And I don't think so. I just, I understand that the Bengals have every right to react the way that they did and bring it to the league's attention.
Right.
And I can't blame them. I can't blame the questions from Cincinnati. Like I said earlier, the past precedes the team here, and all those questions, all the scrutiny is certainly warranted. My standpoint, though, is that, as I said earlier, it's wait and see. And, we in this organization, those of us who cover this organization have certainly had to deal with a lot of situations over the last however many years. And, this organization has continued to move forward. And as the football team goes, they compartmentalize it as well as anybody possibly could. I think, whether it was Deflategate or any other, perceived controversy or real controversy in the past, this organization does a tremendous job. So they'll be focused and ready to go on Sunday, that's for sure.
I guess as a follow-up, I guess there just has to be better communication between the entities about NFL rules. I mean, simple rule is you can't video a sideline. So the independent worker as we are. I mean, I'm not an employee of the Bengals. I'm an independent contractor, and the video guy's an independent contractor. I guess there has to be a better education of things you can and can't do. And, you know, Bill, I mean, not just in Cincinnati and in New England, around the world, Bill Belichick is known as a guy that knows what kind of toilet paper they put in the dispensers in the bathrooms, that he knows everything about everything. So everybody can't believe they wouldn't have any idea of what's going on. But like you say, they're separate departments, they're compartmentalized. But I think in his mind, it's going to be like, man, we better have better communication from this point forward, because you just put me in a big time ringer.
Well, I think absolutely, you know, that's a valid point. I think the organization is as much admitted that through its statement. And you know, I think that, you know, there's no excuse for ignorance in many situations. And, you know, perhaps this is one. I will say this, and Bill began his press conference by reiterating what he has said many times, whether the Patriots were preparing for the Bengals or he was simply asked a question about Paul Brown or Mike Brown, that he has tremendous respect for the Brown family. And I've known that to be the case, for example, because I used to cover the Navy football team. I called Naval Academy football for 16 years. And I remember one time during a game when I slipped up with a reference to Bill Walsh being the father of the West Coast offense during a broadcast of Navy and Rutgers. This is back in the late 90s. And an old football coach at the Naval Academy stopped me the following week and gave me a thorough education on the real brain behind the West Coast offense in his mind. Uh-huh. And that happened to be the late Steve Belichick. And I learned a lot about Paul Brown and Sid Gilman and that Paul Brown coaching tree and all the innovations that Bill Belichick has spoken at great length this week and every other time I've heard him discuss Paul Brown.
Right,
he has
right.
a lot of respect, and I don't know how much weight that carries there in Cincinnati, but I think it's something that's really important to understand.
Our guest is the radio voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy. Let's talk football a little bit. I've been listening to quite a bit of New England sports talk radio this week, and I was tremendously amused when I heard the following. Somebody said, and this is one of the hosts, the Patriots suck this year. They're only going to win one playoff game. I mean, we would have a parade as soon as the Bengals win their next playoff game. Hopefully it's not too far away. But is that kind of the mood that, yeah, they're still, you know, they're good enough to win a playoff game, but that's it?
Well, Dan, they were booted halftime. Granted, they didn't have a very good second quarter against the Kansas City Chiefs, but as a 10-2 team, that's always shown great resilience. And they did, in fact, in the second half of that game, they went off the field booed by the fans at Gillette Stadium. It's the nature of playing here. It's the nature of being as successful as the Patriots have been for the last 19 seasons in particular, that the expectations are impossible to meet. And anything short of a championship in the minds of some, as foolish as it seems elsewhere, is a failure. And with this particular team, I think you have kind of a confluence of different things. You have the concern about this team in this moment in 2019. And then attached to those concerns are, I think, worries on the part of many about the future of the organization with a 42-year-old quarterback who's not under contract for next year. You know, amid a lot of speculation about whether Tom Brady is going to continue playing and if he does, where he's going to play. So I think that's all a factor. You know, for years I've heard since I took over this position in 2013 that the window was closing. And I think, you know, this is a fan base and it's in great part because of the media as well. We're spoiled and we have been spoiled. And, you know, I'm of the mind that, you know, this is something that we should appreciate every moment of, and I often take for granted myself, but then have to step back and remember what it was like when I was calling those Navy games and the Mets were losing 30 out of 33 at one point, or however many bad minor league baseball teams I covered through the years when we first got to know each other.
Boy, Bob, watching this defense that Bill Belichick has assembled this year, now granted, there's the thing that jumps out at me, he's got a lot of 7, 8, you know, year veterans that have been with him a long time. They're versatile. They're smart. He trusts them. They trust him. I've never seen a group where all 11 guys are exactly where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be. They're doing exactly what they're supposed to do from a technique standpoint. It is, and play so hard.
It is a true marvel. And as an offensive lineman, I'm looking at, man, a guy wearing a number in the 30s is, you know, or in the 20s is coming down, and they're bringing him down in the box as a linebacker. And they're doing it on first down. It's their run defense, but they don't have, you know, base personnel in there. All my rules would be, okay, I'm not doing rules by numbers that they're wearing in the jersey. It's where they're lining up, because safeties could be linebackers. Linebackers could be defensive ends. I mean, they are so diverse. It must be hell to prepare for when you're an offensive player and an offensive coach to go against that unit. They're unbelievable.
Yeah, Dave, and I think you really saw that through the first part of the schedule in particular when they were facing teams that, granted, are not having good seasons, frankly. They had a soft schedule early on, but made so especially because of the inexperience at the quarterback position
right.
they were facing. And I think you touched on a couple of key points. The experience of this team and the tenures of Devin McCourty,
right.
Patrick Chung, who is one of those guys in
yep.
the 20s or 30s, number 23,
yep.
who's really been one of the first players, I think, in the league that has been that hybrid safety / line. He's a linebacker for the
right.
most part.
Exactly.
And for pound has been really, I think, as tough as anybody in the league. He's been beat up a lot this year and hasn't been out there as much as we've seen him. But he's kind of a game-changing player where you bring him into the box, he gives you the coverage ability against the tight end or running back, but also is a very solid tackler and a very physical player. And with him and McCourty, they've been together since both were drafted in Chung's case, I think, 2009, and Devin's case, 2010, with but one exception, and that was when Chung was an Eagle for a season. There's great communication between those two safeties. Daron Harmon's been here since 2013. He's the third safety. He and Devin McCourty go back to their days at Rutgers. Then you throw in guys like Jason McCourty, Devin's twin brother, back for his second year. Dante Hightower, who's, along with Devin McCourty, been a quarterback of that defense.
Yep.
They're always on the same page, and they talk about communication and how important it is to them in this defense all the time. And they've benefited as well from the return of Jamie Collins. He's been a different player in 2019 than he was when they traded him away to the Browns in 2016. Still a freakish athlete, but I think he's had a more focused approach here now that he's been paid and also seen what it was like to be on a winless football team.
Right.
You know, and they just do such a great job of putting players in position where they're able to succeed and not in position where they're likely to fail. So they don't ask players to do things they're not capable of typically. And you look at a guy like Adam Butler, for example, situational player up front. Danny Shelton, a guy who's had a good season in his second year. They're getting contributions from everybody on the defensive side of the ball.
Right.
My final question for radio voice Bob Soucy of the Patriots. Julian Edelman is having a tremendous year. But how mediocre has the play been of the other receiving targets between wide receivers and tight ends?
Dan, you're putting it kindly in the minds that you mentioned the fans in sports talk circles here. I have to say it also starts and includes the guys up front, because as much continuity and cohesiveness as they've enjoyed defensively, it hasn't been there offensively either. On the line at the tight end positions, they're missing their fullback, James Devlin. They haven't had a running game to help offset the lack of, you know, their threats at receiver. So it started when they lost David Andrews at the center, and then
yep.
Isaiah Wynn, who,
yep.
The left tackle, was out for a long time this year. James Devlin, who was key last year when they reinvented themselves, became a power running team late in the season, and that was really their springboard to success against the Chargers and Chiefs in the AFC playoffs. But as you saw, when they went out and they brought in Antonio Brown, they were searching. It smacked almost of desperation, and that's been a recurrent problem actually the last 2 years. When they went out and got Josh Gordon initially in 2018, it was a sign of the problems they've had on the outside. They're just lacking, you know, someone to affect coverage, and it's amplified now because you don't have Rob Gronkowski as well as Edelman. When Gronkowski was here last year, he really struggled through the season physically and wasn't the same force in the passing offense for much of the year. But he still forced defensive coordinators to make that decision. You know, am I really going to write him off this week, or am I going to have to, you know, play him the way we typically do and dictate coverage around him? And now what we're seeing a lot of lately is teams know that they can double Edelman, and they don't run the risk of being, you know, beaten outside or, you know, having somebody else be that quick outlet for Brady. And they're pressuring Brady a lot more, and his numbers are dramatically dipping when facing pressure. And the last week in particular against Kansas City, I think we saw a lot of it, a lot of games and stuff up front. We saw some zone pressures and blitzes on Brady. And with Edelman as this one guy that he truly seems to trust, you know, this offense has been hamstrung in a lot of ways.
Finally, and appreciate carving all the time that you did, sir, special teams, the all-important third phase. The Bengals, three out of the four phases, they're in the top 10. And, you know, they're sixth in covering punts, third in kickoff returns, fifth in covering kickoffs. The Patriots, seventh in kickoff coverage, ninth in punt return, ninth in punt coverage. Plus, they have four blocked punts. I think the matchup between the special teams coaches and the players that they coach is going to be very interesting in this one.
No doubt about it, Dave, and it's interesting as well. In addition to the lines that Bill uttered today at his press conference about Mike Brown, the next thing he talked about were the Bengals' special teams. The Patriots have a punter in Jake Bailey who's become a weapon for them, with Matthew Slater and Justin Bethel in particular at the gunner positions. Those are guys who have 10 Pro Bowl appearances between them. And Slater has scored a touchdown on a blocked punt recovering, and he's blocked a punt that set up the Patriots for a touchdown as well. And he has been, I think, the standard setter in the NFL at that position during his career as a Patriot. They haven't necessarily done well, of course, in the other phase of kicking, and that's with their place kickers. They're on their fourth this
right.
season, Nick Folk,
right.
because of an early injury to Stephen Gostkowski. But I think in Folk, they have confidence. He had an appendectomy a couple of weeks ago, so he had a one-week hiatus. Kai Forbath came in here against Houston. Folk returned last week. I think there's confidence that Folk can at least steady them in that phase. But you touched on the block punts. That's four of them this year, franchise record for this team, one away from the Chiefs in 1990. And they've done it in different ways. They've done it up the middle. They've done it from the outside. John Jones is a guy that's an exceptional special teams player. J.C. Jackson is another who's developed into a special teams ace. Belichick devotes probably more resources than anyone when it comes to the middle class of the roster and the middle class of the salary cap when it comes to special teams. And it's an area that he's criticized for frequently when they're going through rough patches as they are now. People wonder, why aren't they devoting more to their offense? Why do they have all these guys like Nate Ebner, for example, a rugby player from Ohio State, who's a core special teamer and blocked a punt last week to help turn things around a bit against the Chiefs? But that's Bill's philosophy. He sees it as almost three equal phases of the game, and he's going to allocate resources to special teams like few others, if any others. And I think we've seen that this year. Like I said, the Bengals are terrific. He's noted that, and it's always been that way.
Our thanks to Bob Soucy, and that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth podcast.